First of all, let's just all say rest in peace. What an absolute icon, a legend. You know, when I chatted to him, he was busy making his 47th album. Millions of streams, hundreds of hit singles. What an absolute amazing, amazing human being. This, unfortunately, is only half an interview. I didn't get to complete it. The poor man passed away this week. Totally gutted. I have no words for it. But I wanted to put this out. I assume this is his last ever interview because we were only halfway through it. And I'll tell you a little bit of the story behind this. I've been trying to, wanted to have Steve on since the beginning and really struggled to find him, get hold of him. Got his number from a whole lot of people and none of his numbers worked. So it was a good 6-month chase to find the man. And I eventually got hold of him and it was fantastic and we set up this interview. Unfortunately, I mean, like I said, there's only half an interview. There were so many things I wanted to talk to him about. I wanted, you know, the big thing that I was building up to that didn't even get to was obviously the PJ Powers collab, which is one of the most iconic sort of collabs in South African history. And really what was burning on my mind, no pun intended, was, you know, those very unique backing vocals that Steve does on Super Hot Sticks' Burnout. It's so, and I had all this stuff, but you know, with these interviews, I don't really prepare them. I know what I want to ask, but I sort of built warm up to them. And this one does go into some cool places. I just feel so honored that I got to talk to him, but I just want to tell you some of the story. So this, say, 30-35 minutes of interview was actually over probably 2 hours of recording and filled with drama. When I got hold of him, we eventually got the interview up and running. The camera quality wasn't so great, so I didn't post it on YouTube with the camera quality, unfortunately, which I can still do. And we were chatting, and just as it was starting to warm up, he started having lots of internet issues. And so we kind of spent another 15 or 20 minutes. If you hear in this interview any sort of sudden changes of topics, it's because we tried so many times to reconnect, and then we'd get like one sentence in and the internet, it wasn't on Wi-Fi, it was on his mobile data. So after many attempts, we kind of had a phone call, just said, this isn't working, let's try again tomorrow. So the next day, we did the next part of the interview, which is probably the next sort of 10 minutes. The first few hours was the first sort of 10, 15 minutes, and the second was the second sort of 10 minutes or so. And then somewhere through the second part of the interview, he ran out of data. And so basically, I sent him some money to get data. Then what happened was I couldn't get hold of him for like 2 weeks or just under 2 weeks. And what had happened was I had sent him money to his e-wallet to go buy data. But the place that he's in, he needed to ask the person who works for him to go and draw the cash and go and buy the data. I didn't realize at the time I could have just sent straight data. And the girl went and drew the cash and then pretended to put the data on. So when we were trying to do our conversation, it wasn't coming on. And then the next time I spoke to him, she'd run away. So eventually we got this next sort of bit of data on. This person had run away with the money and hadn't put data on his phone. She'd said she'd put data on his phone, but she hadn't. And then she just never came back, which was really bizarre. Then our interview started to really warm up. And we got into some really cool places. And this is the second part of the interview I really, really love. I think the first, we're just feeling each other out, the first bits. And this is now, we like know each other for 3 weeks now. And we're not even sort of 20 minutes into the interview. And this is where it sort of takes another turn, is that we just get into this natural discussion about royalties. Now, one of the, you know, thing about a lot of our icons is, you know, back in the day, they got a really bum deal from the record labels back in the day. But a lot of that has been sort of fixed these days, but not all of them are tech savvy. You know, Steve is blind. So how he deals with Spotify and royalty statements is a whole other kettle of fish. So he was feeling like he'd been sort of cheated out of royalties and stuff. And so I said, okay, I'm going to get to the bottom of this for you. And we spoke on the phone two or three more times. And then I phoned up the labels and sort of got, you know, nothing was nefarious there. Everything was, you know, I think he didn't realize, you know, the Spotify royalties are not, are sort of a point one, you know, if you're hearing David Crom as well, it's so small. So I don't think he was realizing he was getting his Spotify royalties. Anyway, the record label sorted it all out. And we were setting up to do kind of the second part of the interview. We had one more data issue, and then we never got to complete the last section. And I was, again, just the burnout story and the PJ Power story never even made it. So this is that half interview. I mean, what an honor. I mean, to have spoken to him, it was always a lifelong dream for me. I'm sharing this half interview with you. It's kind of nuts. We speak about a whole lot of crazy things, you know, and I like it. I really love it when you hear his enthusiasm about sort of contemporary music. There's some beautiful stuff in here. I don't know. I just wanted the world to hear him one last time. And so this is the incomplete sort of final Steve Kikana interview. And then it just ends abruptly. And I'll just sort of wrap that up again at the end. So anyway, this is What's Your Poison. And with great sadness and honor, I bring you Steve Kikana's final interview. Mr. Kikana.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm fine. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
What an honor to be speaking to you, sir.
What? I've got my whiskey ready. I've galloped some few drops already.
Let's get started. Tell me what you're drinking there, and I'll tell you what I'm drinking.
I'm drinking a Johnnie Walker Black.
Is that your poison of choice?
Yeah.
Are you a whiskey man?
I'm a whiskey man, yes. A day without a whiskey is not a complete day.
Okay, you're a man after my heart right now.
Good. What are you drinking?
I am drinking something called a Suntory, and it's a Japanese whiskey.
Wow.
And I try to each show, I try to drink something different so I can get to taste all the different whiskeys and see what's good and what's bad. And
all right.
I think I should have you on the show more often, and then we can taste some whiskeys together.
Yeah.
So it's a huge honor to have you on this show. I mean, really, you are a hero. You know, I've read your autobiography. Your outlook on life is inspiring. What was very interesting to learn about you is that you're blind. The blind part is not complete blindness. Is that right? You can ride a bike, for example.
Yes, I do have a little sight.
Yeah.
But this is not the sight that I can proudly say that it's a sight. It's just a little touch.
Right. I like the story as well. The beginning of your book has a preface, and I thought that it said a lot about you. The guy who wrote the book said he was just a student. Mm-hmm. He was doing a project. He came to see you, and then when he got there, you told him, right, you're going to write my autobiography.
Yes. I always wanted to write a book, but I knew very well that I've never written a book in my life. So I had to find somebody whom I would call my ghost writer.
But it was interesting to me that you just gave this young guy a chance. Someone who just came to visit you ended up being your ghost writer.
In our culture, there is a proverb that says, the older gets stronger through the young. So it was important that I must have these young guys to assist me in what I wanted to achieve. Because they will also be assisted by working with me.
That's a beautiful philosophy.
I'm one person who's not afraid of working with young people, and I'm not afraid of asking them to do so.
Can you remember when you were young and somebody gave you a shot?
Well, I think the first shot that I was given by somebody was when I passed my matric in 1976, and I wanted to get into the music field. There was a older brother, he is late now, called Taylor Pasha. I wanted to sing in their band, but the band leader didn't really want me to be in the band. You know, when I was young, my voice was a bit husky. It was not as smooth as you're hearing it now. So the band leader said, you can't sing. You've got a very husky and horsey voice. You can't sing. And then that Taylor Pasha persuaded that guy to say, try this guy. He will show you miracles. That's how I got to sing in a band for the first time in Pretoria, Ha-Rankuwa. The band was an all-blind band. That's how I got into singing.
So tell me about that all blind school that you were at. That's where this band started.
No, the all-blind band was at Itireleng
Right.
Blind Institute at Ha-Rankuwa. But at Siloe School, where I studied, they bought us some instruments to play around, and then we taught each other how to play instruments and all that. But it was not a matter of a band. But the first time I wanted to be seriously involved in the music industry or in a band, it was at Ha-Rankuwa at Itireleng Institute. And Taylor convinced the band leader to include me in the band.
I mean, you have never let the loss of your sight get in the way. You seem, even when I read your book, you're very headstrong, you're very focused, and your career has been insane. Do you have a memory where you had to tell yourself, right, this ain't gonna stop me?
No, I never believed that being blind is a hindrance. I always told myself that God couldn't have brought me this far only to leave me. If he made me blind, then for sure he has a plan and a good plan about me. So I believe that I will succeed, and I succeeded.
I mean, you've been involved in so many amazing projects. The one thing that I found really interesting was that you were essentially in Stimela before it was Stimela.
Yeah, Stimela was formed by me when we had problems with my first group Pages.
Right,
And
yes.
then I came together with Ray Phiri and Isaac Nqa Mtshali, may their souls rest in peace, and Jabu Sibumbe and Lloyd Lelosa. Then we formed a band, and but we did not even call it Stimela by then. We called it Push.
Push,
Then
right.
I added another keyboard player called Eddie Matiba and Mac Matunjwa, the two keyboard players. So we had about three keyboard players in that band, and we had about two guitar players, Ray Phiri and Ntokozo Zungu. You see. And Jabu Sibumbe kept on playing the bass guitar, and Isaac Ncam Mtshali was the drummist. And we called it Push. We even recorded an album which we called Push. But after a year, the Pages wanted to come back, and I did not want to disappoint them. I came and joined them. We worked together again, and then Push stayed together and called themselves Stimela. That's how Stimela was formed.
So you seem like a very, an artist who knows what they want. You seem like someone who very much knows what they're trying to do. And Ray Phiri sounds like someone similar to you. So how was the dynamic between these two powerhouses in this band?
I think the dynamics were good. We were like two musicians who were very passionate about their music. And well, I was doing, while we were still working with Push, Ray would do the first half singing and I would do the second half singing. So it was just a powerful setup.
Were you competitive at all?
I wouldn't think we were competitive. We were just singing, doing something that we love to do.
I have been looking at the place where you're at, Zebediela.
Yeah.
Where you grow oranges there. Tell me a bit about that area. It looks amazing.
Well, the area is the area of a chief. Unfortunately, our chief has just passed away last week. But that's where the biggest estate, orange estate, was formed in 1902. Yes.
Wow.
Somewhere there. That was when this Zebediela estate was formed by another Englishman who's very rich, Schlesinger.
And it looks like quite a lot of amazing people came out of Zebediela.
I think so. I've got a feeling that it's a very blessed place. You find very good soccer stars like Tlhompho Kekana. He comes from here. Jan Malombo Lichaba comes from here. A lot of very, very beautiful artists come from here. Umanji.
Is it a big place or a small place?
It is a big place.
What do you think is the secret source of that area that breeds such magnificent humans such as yourself?
I think it is the culture of the Ndebeles. You know, the culture of the Ndebeles never believe that they can fail.
Uh-huh.
So my chief has about 54 indunas under him.
Right.
That tells you the how large is Zebediela. If a chief have got about 54 indunas, it means, it's a pity I can't even guess how many square meters would it be, or square, what do you call this thing? Hectares.
Hectares, yeah.
It's a big area, you know, but it's renowned for its orange planting and all that. And it's renowned of lime mine. There is a lime mine called at a place called Imarpen. I think that is owned by Oscar Pistorius' uncle.
Okay, so there's a lot of people have invested in that area.
Yeah.
How is it that you come to live there?
My parents just came to live here. I was born here. I don't know how they came. Maybe, you know, our parents were people who move from area to area because of rearing kettles and all that.
Mm.
But I was born there. I didn't even have a chance of asking them, why did you want to come and live here? I knew exactly that they will tell you we were looking for greener pastures for the cattle.
And with you, you've had so much success all over South Africa and the world. You ended up back there.
I've never thought that I will desert Zebediela. I've always made made it clear that even when I die, I want to be buried in Zebediela. I grow in Zebediela, and I developed the love of that place to such an extent that even when I die, I want to rest in the soil of Zebediela.
Can you tell me a little bit about, you know, your music, the way you approach your songwriting, the way you approach your music is so unique. What is it? What is the music that you listened to when you were honing your craft? What made Steve Kekana sound the way that you do?
Let me tell you something. You know, the fact that I'm blind, I think, is the thing that made me treat my music the way I'm treating it. But as a blind person, I'm always encouraged and influenced by other blind people. Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles, and Babsi Mlangeni here at home are the three people who influenced me. And my intention was never to beat them. My intention was to fulfill what they did within the area of blindness.
What did that mean when you sit down with your instrument? You know, when you start writing, how did that influence?
Firstly, I listened to Ray Charles,
Who's one of my
and
favorite favorites?
I was amazed to hear that he is also blind. I did not know that he was blind.
Right.
And then when I knew that Ray Charles was blind, I told myself that no, I am going to sing like Ray Charles sings. Not necessarily to imitate him, but to prove that blind people are capable of doing good things. And then there came Stevie Wonder, and then there came Bapsi Mlangeni, who is another blind singer here in South Africa. He's the first, he likes saying he's the first blind superstar Africa. So I said, I am going to fulfill what he started as Bapsi Mlangeni here in Africa. And I'm going to be another or the second blind superstar in Africa. And indeed, it happened like I wanted.
Do you still listen to music? Like, what is your musical taste now? Do you
Well, my musical taste is R&B now.
Right.
Rhythm and blues. I love those things.
Who do you, what songs do you like? What artists do you like?
There is one song that say, I see you in a different light. You see that song? But I'm getting useless nowadays. I just like songs and I can't remember the people who are singing those songs.
That's okay.
I see you in a different light. And but my favorite singer, whew, you just hijacked me.
I'm sorry.
I just don't know. Yeah, you just hijacked me. But there are a lot of American singers that I like. Who's this guy? Anthony Hamilton.
Anthony Hamilton. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, he's cool. Did you know Jonas Gwangwa?
Yeah, Jonas Gwangwa. I have to tell the truth. Jonas Gwanga plays good music, but I cannot really say that he was my favorite. I choose songs. Flowers of the Nation of Jonas Gwanga, I love the most.
Who are your favorite contemporaries, your local artists that you rate? Ray was
My
a
favorite singer is Zonke Dikana.
Great.
Yeah, Sipho Ngazi.
Yes.
But there is another girl. There is another girl. I don't care who says what.
Okay.
You will find no reason of not liking her. Kelly Khumalo.
Nice.
She is an immaculate singer. When it comes to the gentlemen, I will choose Afro Traxion.
Nice.
I will choose who's this guy? Why do I forget the names of these people? Vusinova.
Vusinova, cool.
Vusinova. Yeah. And I will my favorite in the gentleman is a guy called Mondli Ngcobo. Mondli Ngcobo, phew. Look, if you find time, find the song. Just find Mondli Ngcobo, and then you'll find the song Ungijayivela Kamnandi. Or you find my latest album, he wrote me a song called Wela and Nomalizo. If you listen to
Definitely
those
not.
two songs, you'll see how immaculate that guy is.
Amazing. So are you still, do you work with any, do you like call these artists and work with them?
Yes, I do call them and work with them. I am planning to do another album. I'm sure that'll be my 47th
I
album
was going to
now.
say, the fact that you're doing another album is not surprising. You have a long arm of albums. I mean, you're prolific.
Yeah, it'll be my 47th album if I do it, and
Jeez.
I know I will do it. I've got this spirit of saying, If I know that I won't win this fight, I don't even start it. But the fact that I'm starting that album, I know I will win. I'll do it.
So is this, you've given me some context here. This fighting spirit, is it the spirit of Steve Kekana or is it the spirit of Zebediela?
If I want to be safe, I would rather say both. But I think that's a spirit of Steve Kekana, the fighting spirit. But as I say, I won't start a fight if I'm not sure that I'm going to win that fight.
Right. Well, that's smart. That's a smart way to box. Maybe you should have been a boxing promoter.
Maybe. I'm sure my boxers would have been beaten all the time because I can't give them good tips.
Well, you've got the best advice. Don't get in a fight you can't win. That's the best advice for any boxer.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about your relationship with your parents and growing up and what made Steve Kekana?
I was reared by a single mother. Mm. And when my grandfather realized that this young lad is going to be blind, because I turned blind at the age of 5, and my mom was distraught, thinking that her last born is going to be blind. So my grandfather made a very, very vivid prophecy. He said, this young lad is going to be the king of all his siblings. And that prophecy manifested itself so vividly that out of all my siblings, I'm the last born, and we are 5 children in there. I'm the only one who's got, is it 3? Yeah, 3, and 3 law degrees. And the 4th one is an honorary doctorate of philosophy. So that in itself shows that I'm becoming the king of all my siblings.
That's amazing.
So I think that grandfather of mine was a prophet in himself. So he predicted that I'm not going to be a beggar. He predicted that I'm going to work for myself. He predicted that I'm going to do things that will amaze many people, because he said, this young lad is going to make the eyes of the world look at us. That's when he was consoling my mom. And I grew up in Zebediela among the young guys. My friend, my biggest friend of that time was a certain guy, Hendrik Langer. And when many people did not want to go or hang around with me because I was blind, he was the one who was hanging around with me. He would come and fetch me from my house, and we go and search for the cows of his father and all that, because in my family, we didn't have cows, didn't have anything, but we lived a communal life. We would go and search for cows. Now, he liked me because when we have to pump water, I was the strongest. So I could pump more water for his father's cows to drink. So that's how he loved me. I'm not necessarily saying he loved me for the pumping machinery that I had, but he was a real friend. And now I decided to make a mechanism of saying, those who did not want to hang around with me, I would make sure that I get closer to them and I would beat them up.
Get close to your enemies.
So that they must tell me what. Yeah, I get close to my enemies and I beat them up. So they ended up now liking to be with me so that they know that they are safe. Nobody will beat them up when I'm around.
You scary, Steve. You mean business.
Yeah, that's how young boys grow.
Right.
And now, if you are blind, there is no other technique that will make other young boys come close to you.
So how do you
if
fight
you don't beat them up
when you can't see them?
I told you I do see a little.
Right. But I mean, do you have some sort of special
I do
fighting
see a
technique?
Little. Yeah, no. But then for them not to be beaten up, they were always around me. And when I started to teach myself to play a string bass, you know?
Yes.
Then that's when they stopped fearing me. They loved me and they would carry the string bass. And then when we get to a place, we sit down and I play the string bass and I sing. And then at school, they taught us guitars and everything. So they started enjoying my singing and music and all that.
And what were you singing when at that
we were
time?
Now in, hey, the songs of Mashatini, the songs of
Mandela
Queens,
the Lion of Soweto.
Yeah. So we were singing many, many, many songs. And when I was tired of playing, then I would tell them, listen, now I'm playing jazz. And I knew nothing about jazz. I would just play any note that comes to mind. Boom, 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 boom. I think that's just then they get bored and then they disperse.
Genius.
Then I rest.
So that was
and
jazz.
I knew nothing about jazz.
That was jazz to you, just a bunch of weird notes sitting together.
Yeah. I just did a bunch of weird notes, you know, and I said I called them jazz.
I love that. I'm going to do that. Here's something, you know, even today, the music industry is very complicated. Like the flow of royalties and the flow of business managers and how the relationships are, it's very complicated and there's a lot of crazy stuff then. But back in your day, what was the music scene like in terms of management and keeping control of the business and the finances, or were you just always good at that?
No, I hope I'm still not good at finances. But the in our times, the finances were run by the recording companies, and then they would pay you the royalties. I still say that we were being paid peanuts because I was being given 2.5%.
2.5%. So you were writing the songs, recording the songs.
I'm writing.
Producing the songs.
I'm writing, yes. But the record company, EMI, was giving me like 2.5% for a record sale, you see. Nowadays, these musicians of today, they're making good money because now they can sell through iPhone, iTunes, whatever, and all blah, blah, blah. Now, some of us are illiterate when it comes to those issues. So maybe we don't make good money like
just
the young
hang
ones.
On a second.
But
Steve, I checked you out on Spotify the other day.
Yeah.
And I saw like your songs are getting here, right? Raising My Family, which I love, it's 2.5, it's almost 3 million streams. There's another version of it on Spotify that's got 554,000 streams. Color Me Black has 82,000 streams. You are streaming very well.
What can I say? Can I? Would you believe me if I said I've got nothing of all those things that you call you reading out?
I can't believe that. So
maybe you will have to come, then we discuss it. Maybe you will be my new manager now.
Okay, let's just explore this for
because
a second. Are you saying you are not earning royalties right now
on Spotify?
Yes.
No.
Right.
If there are royalties, I've never seen anything coming to me. The only royalties that I have is the old royalties that I get from Gallo, EMI, and...
Let's figure this out. This is a mystery.
It is surprising because one guy told me that I saw your numbers on Spotify. You've got about millions in there. So I don't know that.
I mean, that is crazy.
I need somebody who understands these things and who can trace my money there, because I think I've got money. It might not be millions, but it can be thousands.
Look, I'm going to see if I can track this down for you, because that is an absolute tragedy. But I will find out for you, 100%. I will figure that out for you, because I tell you, a lot of, you know, I work and talk, and especially on this podcast, a lot of our legendary artists, and they're not getting streaming numbers like that. You are getting serious streaming numbers there. So there's got to be a royalty in there for you.
I can tell you right away, John, that every musician of my time, maybe I'm wrong if I say every, most musicians of my time, have their songs under the control of recording companies, because I write a song and then they say they will do the publishing. They take 50% of my song. Mm. They give me 50%. Right. They say, I have signed an assignment. Now, an assignment in legal terms, it means you have given the right.
Right.
You see?
So owns your publishing? Who owns your publishing?
Now, lately, I've got my publishing company.
Okay, great.
But all these things of raising my family that you see and all that, they're owned by EMI and Gallo and whatever.
But they own a percentage of the publishing. They don't own the entire publishing.
No, they take 50% and they give me 50%. And while I'm saying, they must give me, they want more, they must give me 75% and take 25% for administrating. EMI owns some recordings.
Right.
And publishing. And Gallo owns some of the recordings and publishings. Because when my contracts expired with EMI, then I went to Gallo. So they did the same thing. I always fought with them, but I couldn't.
And that's, sorry to say, that's where this whole thing ends. We never got to complete this interview. It ends in a very weird place, which actually gets resolved in the real world and on phone calls and stuff. And I really wished I could have done the last part of this interview just so that it resolves a bit better, and you can hear the sort of resolve of the story. But you know what? A legend came our way. Rest in peace. The absolute musical icon and a hero, Steve Kekana, on What's Your Poison?
If you enjoyed this episode of What's Your Poison, you're pretty cool, because it was fucking great. Do us a favor and subscribe either on the Apple Store, the Spotify Store, wherever you are. Leave a comment, please. Let me say it again, because you probably just skipped over it. Just leave a comment, because it helps with the ratings, and I would appreciate it. Also, go to johnsavage.com if you want to see all the rest of the episodes, or subscribe to my newsletter. The end.